This is a special place, and this is a special time. Let us begin it in song.
Give us the spirit of the child. Give us the child who lives within.
The child who trusts. The child who imagines. The child who sings.
The child who receives without reservation. The child who gives without judgment.
Give us a child's eye, that we may receive the beauty and freshness of this day, like a sunrise.
Give us a child's ears, that we may hear the music of mythical times.
Give us a child's heart, that we may be filled with wonder and delight.
Give us a child's faith, that we may be cured of our cynicism.
Give us the spirit of the child, who is not afraid to need, who is not afraid to love.
It is now time for centering. Please feel free to come forward and light a candle to focus special memories or feelings. Please join me in an attitude of prayer. The great end in religious instruction is not to stamp our minds upon the young, but to stir up their own, not to make them see with our eyes, but to look inquiringly and steadily with their own, not to give them a definite amount of knowledge, but to inspire a fervent love of truth, not to form an outward regularity, but to touch inward springs, not to bind them by ineradicable prejudices to our particular sect or peculiar notions, but to prepare them for impartial, conscientious judging of whatever subjects may be offered to their decision, not to burden the memory, but to quicken and strengthen the power of thought, not to impose religion upon them in the form of arbitrary rules, but to awaken the conscience, the moral discernment. In a word, the great end is to awaken the soul, to bring understanding, conscience, and heart into earnest, vigorous action on religious and moral truth, to excite and cherish spiritual life. I'm George Denny, and one of my duties is to pick and occasionally read stories for the children in the morning services. So I've expanded this and to my homily or talk today. I feel frustrated because, of course, I can only expose people to one short story or book a week, and there's more to it than that. So I thought I would use this time to talk to you a little bit about children's literature. I think that's enough of a spiritual subject to qualify to for a sermon in a Unitarian church. I was educated to be a career naval officer. A few years into this career, I decided that the most fun I had was holding classes for sailors on the culture and language of the countries we were going to visit. I felt the need to be a teacher. I left the Navy and was able to go, after marrying my wife, to back to school to get a teacher's credential. She put her hubby through working as a school teacher herself, for which I am eternally grateful. She'll be here at the next service to take credit. And taught mathematics, which, of course, with an engineering degree, that's what I had the most background in. I got through her family a job as a math teacher at a private school, a boarding school on the Big Island of Hawaii. It was a wonderful job, even made even more wonderful by the fact they had a sabbatical year program. And for my sabbatical year, I got to go back to the University of Oregon and go to library school. I was set to go back to my old school after this year with a library degree, but with no job as a librarian because we had one. But in January, I was called by the headmaster, who informed me that the school had purchased a new facility with space for a library for the elementary and middle schools, and he asked if I would be interested in doing that. That was a difficult decision, obviously not. So I quickly went to my advisor and made sure that for the last semester of school, I had a children's literature course. That's what saved me. It was wonderful. After 2 years then at the school, I applied. My wife and I got out a map and said, let's move. And we started in Los Angeles, which we could not afford. And we started moving east until we ended up in Texas on the map and said, that's intriguing. I flew out to Austin, Texas in March of 1978. Of course, the weather was absolutely beautiful in March. And interviewed, and a month later, I was offered a job at an elementary school in the Round Rock Independent School District. We moved there. When we got off the airplane and got into the Texas weather in the middle of July, Barb looked at me and said, well, at least my hair will curl. And she was right. Of course, we were welcome. We made the right decision. For 22 years, I worked at this particular elementary school. I retired in the year 2000, and for the last five, have been working in the children's department, go figure, of one of the branches of a large bookstore chain. About children's books, first thing you should know is someone once said that all children's books are didactic. They all teach something. It's our job, sort of, to figure out if it is what we want. There has been an explosion in children's books in the last few decades. Some time ago, I was told that art departments in colleges would tell their students not to try to get into children's book art because there wasn't a market. That day is long gone. Children's books, you can enjoy just looking at children's books without reading the pictures. Some of the artwork is absolutely beautiful, which is one of the reasons for children's books. They should be exposed to beautiful artwork as well as the text. Now, where do you find them? Of course, there are bookstores. And there are libraries. I must give you a caveat. If you go to a bookstore, working in one myself, I will have to say you are not necessarily going to get the background from the bookseller that you would if you went to a library or a school. During the school year, you might even try, if you live close to an elementary school, it's worth it, call up the school library and say, would you mind if I come visit your library? If they can't check the book out to you, which is understandable, at least you're going to have a time to look and see what's there. And usually the elementary school libraries have the best collections of anything, often better than even the public schools. I had 10,000 books in my library to serve 650 kids. It was a good collection. And I welcomed neighbors, people, women and men who lived in the neighborhood to come in and check it out. That's what libraries are for. I think that's what they taught me in library school. Now, how are library books judged? I mentioned that there was a Newbery Award given to the book A Joyful Noise. And children's books are an anomaly. They are for children, but they're written by adults, generally purchased by adults, and they're often judged by adults. Now, that's not completely true, because if you are a good parent or a grandparent or whatever, you should be giving the kids a chance to look at. And how do you find them? You have to immerse yourself. Another warning, and that is if you go to the bookstores, you're going to find this. Bookstores have a high turnover. They are not likely to have a lot of what I would call classic books unless their computers tell them that those things are being sold. Like Dr. Seuss or Eve Bunting, who wrote the book The Wall, which I read every Memorial Day. Beverly Cleary, Gary Paulson. These are authors that the bookstores will have. But unfortunately, in a bookstore, they have to keep, if they're not selling, they won't have it. You'll find gems by going to the public library or going to a school library and asking a librarian what there are. You will see new trends. Celebrity books. The tone of voice tells you how I feel about those. There was a wonderful cartoon in maybe the New York Times. A struggling children's book author talking to his editor, trying to talk the editor into putting out a few more thousand copies of his particular book. And while he's talking, the phone rings, and the editor picks it up and says, "Oh, yes, Mr. Cruz, yes. You want to write a children's book? No problem. Yeah, we can do a pre-printing of maybe 500,000 and make sure we get you a good ghostwriter, and we'll send you off a check for $300,000 if that's all right, and thank you for calling." Click. And that's how it works, unfortunately. The names work. I would recommend, of all the celebrity children's authors, I would recommend Jamie Lee Curtis as one that's you might look at. But some of the others, like Ray Romano and all that, I would stay away from them if I were you. Just a note. There are lots of books now that are very attractive because they feature cuddly animals, and the illustrations are very cute, but the text is pretty maudlin. Lots of books that are read to the children at night book. I would look carefully at those. Unfortunately, you are paying a lot for those particular books. Then there is, I'm going to try to not make this a tirade, but there is my favorite subject in children's literature. Favorite is being ironic. I was notorious in the Round Rock School District among my 25 elementary school library colleagues for proudly proclaiming the fact that I did not have a single book in my library from one particular publisher, and that publisher was the Walt Disney Company. I just had a thing about Walt Disney books. Most librarians will eschew the Walt Disney so-called versions. And one of my, my children's literature professor at the University of Oregon had particularly strong feelings about it and had an entire lecture on the subject of Walt Disney and really opened my eyes. What Walt Disney has done to the classics are, of course, an abomination. It's interesting because obviously one young woman in the class missed that particular lecture because at the end of the semester we were to turn in some kind of a project based on children's literature. I made a board game about Little Toot the Tug, where you rolled the dice and moved back and forth as you do in board games. One young woman came up at the end of the class and presented the teacher with something she had made. It was a small wooden box into which a librarian could put various things. It was covered, decoupage, with Walt Disney characters. And when she handed it to the professor held it almost as if it were an explosive device. We felt sorry for her, but she missed the lecture. Walt Disney has done some good stuff. The original movies are fine. I appreciate it. Having grown up in Southern California, the cleanliness of Disney World, I thought it was a great place, or Disneyland. I forget which one is which in Southern California. And I loved it. But what he did, his company did, but when I say he, that's like saying, really, you can blame the president for the administration policies. I blame Mr. Disney for his policies. What he did to Cinderella, The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, these classic tales. No, there's no excuse for it. Well, he would say there's an excuse, and that is that he can make money. I was often asked by parents, I understand that the original version of, let's say, The Little Mermaid is more worthwhile in many ways, but my child is too young to read that. And I was tempted to smile and sweetly at them and say, "So, your child is too young to read the original Little Mermaid. You're right, it is an intense story. So hold off, because if you give them the Walt Disney version, that's all they will have." Let me give you an example, and then I'll end on an upscale note. My favorite, The Jungle Book. Kipling, Disney. Disney first. I feel as if I should have a pair of vinyl gloves. We are introduced to Ka the Python and Shere Khan. Of course, they're on the same page and they're exchanging meaningful glances. Probably they are conspiring. But here's Disney's take on Ka the Python. "Sly old Ka the Python would have loved to squeeze Mowgli tight in his coils. Mowgli's friends warned him against Ka. Well, personally, I think that's perhaps from the old story of Adam and Eve, with the serpent. I don't know why, because here's what Kipling has to say about it. Mowgli hurried off into the darkness, wild with excitement, hardly looking where he set foot. And the natural consequence was that he tripped full length over Ka's great coils, where the python lay watching a deer path near the river. "Shh," said Ka angrily. "Is this the jungle work to stamp and ramp and undo a night's hunting when the game are moving so well, too?" "The fault was mine," said Mowgli, picking himself up. "Indeed, I was seeking thee, Flathead. But each time we meet, there are longer and broader by the length of my arm. There is none like thee in the jungle, wise, old, strong, and most beautiful Ka. Now, whither does this trail lead?" Ka's voice was gentler. "Not a moon since there was a manling with a knife, threw stones at my head, and called me bad little tree cat names because I lay asleep in the open. I and turned every driven deer to all the winds, and Mowgli was hunting, and this same Flathead was too deaf to hear his whistle and leave the deer roads free," Mowgli answered composedly, sitting down among the painted coils. "Now the same manling comes with soft, tickling words to this same Flathead, telling him that he is wise and strong and beautiful. And the same old Flathead believes and coils a place thus for the same stone-throwing manling. And art thou at ease now? Could Bagheera give thee so good a resting place?" Ka had, as usual, made a sort of soft half-hammock of himself under Mowgli's weight. The boy reached out in the darkness and gathered in the supple cable-like neck until Ka's head rested on his shoulder. And then he told him all that had happened in the jungle that night. This is what I want to read to my grandkids when they are 10 or 11. Obviously not the others. The upscale note. Children need to hear beautiful language if they are to speak and write beautifully. They need to hear stories of love and courage and joy and sorrow so their imaginations are fired and their hearts expanded. They need to hear the language of Rudyard Kipling, the whimsy of A.A. Milne, the sorrow of Oscar Wilde, the mystery of Hans Christian Andersen, the wisdom of E.B. White, the terror of the Brothers Grimm, the wildness of Dr. Seuss. There is no shortage of magnificent children's literature. Children have little enough time for reading in their busy, scheduled lives. When they read or when they listen, what we give them should be worthy of their eager, wandering minds and souls.